Welcome to the FinTech Scaling Show. This podcast is sponsored by Scale Up Consulting, helping FinTech startups create a scalable organization to support an ever-increasing demand. When you're ready to grow, reach out to us at richard@scaleupconsulting.co. Now, over to the show with Richard Doty, founder and host. Hi, folks, and welcome to another episode of the FinTech Scaling Show, where we talk to cutting-edge leaders in the industry and chat to them about scaling. Why are we doing this? We want to be part of, a major part of, the creating the new financial ecosystem, and we want to give you insights, tips, strategies, and tactics that you can take away and implement so you can lead your teams, your groups, your ecosystems, even parts of society into a prosperous future. And super stoked today to have Michael on the show. Michael is a brilliant entrepreneur. I'm so happy that he said yes to actually coming on the show. So awesome. He's had a number of startups and found a number of businesses. He's also worked in consulting and he's done stints as an advisor and also a non-exec director. So some tremendous experience we're going to be tapping into today. And he's also the founder and CCO of Tokyo, which is a company out here in the UK. And welcome today, mate. Really, really stoked to have you on the show.
Yeah, definitely. Great for having me and looking forward to our conversation.
Cool. And we're going to dive into, just to set the scene today, we're going to dive into leadership. And leadership is a big, big subject. And it's a critical subject to understand and think through as you start up your business and also go through the process to scale up and expand your business and your horizons. And not just expand your business, I think it's also expand yourself, expand your team. So I want to jump in and start with this question. As a leader, Michael, I mean, how have you over the years made certain that you take time out from the day-to-day and invest in yourself, invest in your knowledge?
Yeah, I think I've probably run it on two tracks for that. I think the first one's less about the knowledge and probably more a little bit on the health. And I think when things have gotten busy and when, you know, things get stressful, the biggest thing I have to really try to do is step back and keep a consistency on a little bit of the gym, the exercise, running. I feel like that's where I can go clear my head. And it's something I'd really have tried to keep consistent throughout this, because it's when the times get tough where it starts to fall apart. Mm-hmm. And you can lean on it. I'd say second to that, on the learning, my view on it has always been trying to keep up to date and on track of what's going on in the industry. Yeah. So, you know, I usually try in the mornings to kind of, you know, I start off with my TechCrunch and my Sifted to make sure I've got some awareness of what's going on in the market. And then really kind of doing, you know, tracking some of the good newsletters out there, kind of doing deep dive reading on where the market's going. And for me, that's been the most helpful. I know in the past, I used to read more some business books, and I still do every once in a while. But it's I've found the newsletters, the podcasts, the likes of that are really kind of bringing good stuff from what's happening right now.
And okay, you mentioned health. You went straight in and you started health. So you mentioned being consistent there. And let's dive into that. When you say consistent, are you meaning on a day-to-day basis, you wanted to go for a run, go to gym, you're blocking out time in your diary, time in your schedule to have that space to breathe, to clear your head and strategize and think about other things that are upcoming?
Yeah. So I'm an early riser, partially because I got young kids and therefore I'm kind of dead by the end of the day. So if my perfect routine is I get up around 5:45 and try to set around 45 minutes aside to get my exercise in, clear my head for the day. I don't know. I became a fan, I guess it was probably about 2 years back, of Atomic Habits. So good book there. And trying, like, that's where I get the consistency is, if, you know, if I can get up every morning, do my exercise, clear my head, go out for the day, you know, feeling fresh, it's much better. Where I find myself, if I hit a patch where it's super busy, you're working late nights, you're cutting out the exercise, the sleep starts getting worse, it all starts to ravel up. So for me, I try to keep that consistency because it keeps my mind a bit sane.
And you mentioned a book there, Atomic Habits. What led you to maybe reading that book? And it sounds like there's a shift at some point in time to create this new routine, create these new habits.
Yeah, to be fair, I think probably 2 years ago that I first read it, and it was from hearing about it from others, right? And I think it was, I tried to implement some of these things myself, just kind of these kind of consistent habits, but it was always a little bit inconsistent. So when I read that book, I guess some nice simple tools to help really drive it. So the simple ones for the morning exercise before I go to bed, take the gym kit out, put it right where I'm going to see it when I get up. Have the water filled up where I'm going to exercise. So I got no excuses. I got to walk past my gym clothes to get out the door if I'm going to try to go to work early. So it puts you front and center. It makes it easier to follow the habit.
Nice. Looking at the knowledge side of things, so you mentioned TechCrunch and Sifted and other news items, podcasts and newsletters that you read on a consistent basis. When you take that in, how do you communicate that out to maybe your leadership team, others you're working with, to, I guess, make certain that not only you take it in, you sort of scaling up your knowledge base, but also your team is doing the same?
Yeah, so I think there's a bit of this stuff is a bit of a mix, right? Because what we're tending to see on a bit of the TechCrunch, Sifted, payments.com and those, it's making sure you got visibility on the news and what's happening, right?
Yeah.
And what that also means, we're seeing either partners who've done a raise or a competitor who's done a raise or someone who's pushing that out. And on those, the basics, these are getting picked up in our, we always kick off. So Monday, I primarily sit aside for internal meetings. First one being kind of, so I'm obviously sit on the commercial side. Mm-hmm. So first meeting of the week is our commercial all hands. And that's where we also get an opportunity to say, guys, did you pick up competitor A just did this, or our partner just did this, and therefore we need to track that. And that takes it everything from our sales team now maybe recognize they need to take a competitor more seriously, or actually that if one of our partners is just if we see them growing significantly, that we want to get ourselves closer to them. So in some of it is very tactical, right? Making sure we're all on the front of this. Other things, I think it plays more into how we start shaping our view as a kind of leaders of the business. Mm-hmm. So obviously, fintech, it's moving fast. There's every time you have a baby fintech, like your reg tech and your insure tech break off. But essentially what we're trying to do is figure out, especially us, we're primarily a B2B2B business.
Yeah.
So we've got a lot of business out there relying on our platform to bring to market their own innovation. Mm-hmm. And therefore us having a clear view, where is the market going? For us, what we see is our ability to innovate more effectively is one of our differentiators. If a small business is maybe building something out on their own, if they get it wrong, it can have a material impact on, in some cases, their success or failure. We kind of see innovation as one of our core differentiators. So if we're looking out at the market, if we're seeing the trends that are happening, the players that are coming about, and therefore we are making informed decisions on where we're going to place our bets, and then we innovate more effectively, we think we have a chance to be the winner here.
Okay, so I get it. You're taking the knowledge, you're innovating, but as a leader and as a leadership group, how do you communicate that message to the market on a consistent basis? Just as the habits that you have, you're waking up, going to the gym, etc., so too internally in the business, when you obviously innovate and you getting stuff to market, you have to consistently communicate. So it'll be interesting to understand how you are communicating that message on a consistent basis.
Yeah, so to be fair, it's been an evolving process. I'd say probably up until, early this year, right? I wouldn't quite call it stealth mode because we weren't trying to hide ourselves or anything like that, but we didn't touch marketing. We built a website 18 months ago, and our job was to get our core product to market, stay hyper-focused on that. We're now expanding upon that, right? We're going out to market directly, and therefore, our point of view and telling that story is becoming much more important. Mm. And it's a process we're going through now. So, and our view is probably as a starting point, is first of all, leveraging the expertise within our business. We don't think our job is to distill knowledge from other people necessarily and just push it out there, right? We're not a content creation company in that sense. What we do think is that we're hiring people, and maybe this is the starting point, right? We're hiring people with domain expertise who, in our view, know a ton about cards, about payments, about compliance, about FX, right? Mm-hmm. And now what we're trying to do is now give them a channel and a voice to push that out. And therefore, obviously, it helps put our name out there. But the other thing, it helps kind of put good content and knowledge out in the market, which tends to be targeted at our customers. Mm. And therefore, we get a good circle here. So in our heads, it starts with domain expertise. The better we know these topics, that means we build it better into our product. We showcase it better when we talk about it. We don't want to just have content and knowledge for the sake of it. If not, then they'll when they come to buy us, they'll realize that it was a paper, not a process.
Yeah, I hear you. And I like what you're saying about we hire in domain expertise. So there's more than one person that has the knowledge. Therefore, in a way, you're multiplying your effect when you start pushing out that communication, that thought leadership content to market, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's, you know, it's one of those things. I know it's a bit cliche, but to hire people smarter than you. But I think when in a space like this, where especially, you know, in a role like myself, where I'm all across a number of things, you cannot know every single depth about every single topic. And it feels good when you go to meet a new client or a new prospect with someone who's been in the business for a week, and they can hold their own at a meeting because they know that topic, maybe not our company yet, but that topic better than everybody else in the room. And I think that's becoming a bit of our culture, is going out there and getting the people who know what they're doing independent of us, and then both through our product and everything, can actually bring that to life and distribute that out to lots of different people.
You know, just staying on that theme, I mean, how do you add, as a leader of your business, how do you add value to that team, those people that are coming in, and make certain that you stay in your strength zone and they are also working in their strength zone?
Probably it sits on two angles, right? So I guess for the people within the business, like myself, from the beginning, we naturally know the business and the product better than anyone else joining there, right? And like I said, we want to bring somebody who has a bit of domain expertise, who knows that better than us.
Yeah.
So I guess my first job when we're bringing them in is to help them know the business and the product better and get to be experts in that as quickly as possible, right? The second thing we try to do is enable them to implement that domain knowledge within our business. And that happens in several ways, right? First, we're an agile business. We work in a squad methodology and the likes of that. So that means whether it is a salesperson who's been out in the market for SME lending for the past 10 years, or someone coming over from the cards industry, although they may be sitting on sales partnerships, the likes of that, they're also on our squads. And therefore, you know, as we're doing requirements design for how we're going to roll out an SME lending product, that team is all in there. So we're inserting that domain expertise immediately into what we're building. And that plays that both role. Like, so we're enabling them to know the product better. So they're having a material impact on that. And then the second thing is, because we do host lunch and learns, right? So, and these we ask them to pull together, and sometimes it's quite basic stuff, but it's when you've got a business, we've grown quite quickly, right? So in the past year, we've gone from, I think it was 17 people at the end of December up to, I think we are at 57 today. So quite a big jump. And that's a mix of everyone from commercial sales partnerships through to back-end, front-end developers, QA, and all the things that go around that. Your level of, even though we may be building an SME lending solution or a card solution, not everyone's going to know that. So being able to have everyone on board, 30 minutes, this is how cards work. This is where people make their money out of it. This is the different models people use to deploy out cards. Again, it's making the whole company better. So we give them, you know, we bring them up to speed as quickly as possible on what we're doing internally in the business and the products. And then they make us all better by doing it. And what we find is that kind of builds a very good connection early days and allows people to contribute to the business very early days before they even get up to speed on everything that's happening.
So you go through a process of obviously getting those experts in, then you train them up, you mentor them. It sounds like you make certain that the folk that are coming in also not just understand those expertise, but also understand the business and the product. You have lunch and learns and continuous training sessions to make certain that not just these people are connected across the business, not just in their silos. And then that plays out, as you mentioned, to them or new employees having a greater impact as you go forward, right?
Yeah. And I think I had two thoughts on it. So my second thought, and this probably goes back to some of our learnings from past ventures and the likes of that.
Yeah.
And I think it's important at a startup to design and implement culture and not let it necessarily happen always by accident. At one of our previous companies, right, which we scaled it up from about 3 or 4 up to about 100 in the course of about, I think, 12 or 15 months, I'll call that the one where we got lucky, right? We didn't kind of always sit there and think out and map out what our culture was going to be, but we hired in some people who really cared about it. They clicked. It just had to be having to be one of those businesses where people came together, great friendships started, everyone got along amazingly, which is quite important because we were across 3 different locations. And it, probably as we hit probably around the 50 or 60 mark, we started saying, okay, something good is happening here from a culture perspective. Mm. And we thought, what are we doing good? What are we doing bad? How do we manage that? How do we turn that into something like actually we can share and implement when people, when we have new people come on? I think it was one of our biggest takeaways when starting Tokyo, right? Mm. It's one of the first things we started about, thought about was, well, we already knew we were going to be across two locations in Spain and London. And we started from day one, how are we going to connect people? Especially considering most of our growth has been in a COVID world where people aren't actually sitting together face to face. So, you know, we started finding out, you know, materials, our HR team has done an amazing job of making culture one of the core parts of our, like internally, at least one of our core differentiators. And again, we're starting to see that same dynamic where when we head out for a lunch or a meal after work, it's got everyone connecting amazingly well. And it plays another role in bringing people into the business and how you share. Because what we tend to find is that the better that people get along, the more often they're sitting around having a coffee together. Or we've done, we did the Zoom work drinks and those things. And a Zoom escape room, which they pulled off surprisingly well. I was impressed. But it's one of those things. It's about creating these environments for people who care about what they're doing, have, you know, in this case, good domain expertise, to be able to share and be feel open that they can get involved and put their hand up. So, you know, I just think is that kind of second point, really trying to build culture in a startup from early days is important.
And what were your maybe three or five takeaways from that initial venture that you bought into to Tokyo that, you know, has helped you really explode and move on in the culture sort of area?
Yeah. So the first one, it was, so like I mentioned, it was across three different locations and each location had its own purpose. London was the commercial team. Glasgow was the operations team and Spain was the, or Madrid was the development team, right? Develop product tech and everything. Right. And when that first part happening, there was a, you know, tensions or this, that they do that, we do this. And what we started to realize is that the first thing was getting people across to know each other and meet each other is critical. So we put a good amount of investment in ensuring that our teams traveled and met each other. That's when we started, even before then, that we started doing kind of some more Zoom type meetups, getting people to know each other. It's the same in any place in the world, right? When you meet someone in person, when you begin to have a personal connection, when maybe tension is happening, you know how to de-escalate it. You know, you've already had a meal with that person. So if things aren't going right, you can pick up the phone to them and do that. So one of the big things we did here from the beginning was make sure that there's lots of interaction. Again, harder in a COVID world, but again, our kind of HR people team really helped facilitate that. So that was probably one of the first takeaways. And I think probably the second one is not allowing these parts of the organizations to become siloed, right? Mm-hmm. The reality is that a well-run business, it's operating like one machine, one engine. And that's what we're trying to do now. It's something it doesn't happen naturally, right? People naturally kind of go into their own territories. So what we're trying to do is make sure, like I mentioned with the squads, right? Mm-hmm. That our commercial team on there, our QA team is on there, our obviously our tech development is on there. Therefore, if something goes wrong, it's not like, well, I didn't know about that, or, you know, we didn't do this together. It's from day one that from the inception of the idea through to selling it to the market, it was a team effort. Hmm. So I think, you know, things like this, I think if you're all in the same room all the time and it's a small business, you know, things can happen naturally. But in a world where we're in today where people are in and out of the office or not in the office, different locations, you have to really work at this. You need to make sure that you take the effort to put people in the different offices, that you create the facilities for people to talk to each other, that you make sure they're working together. And that's what we've been working really hard on.
I love it. And culture is an interesting subject. I mean, it's you must probably dedicate, hours and different podcasts to it. But one thing that you've mentioned a couple of times, a few times here, is people. Culture is people. And, you know, there's no getting away from that. Culture is people and communication. And you better like working with people and you better have a philosophy on how to deal with people if you want to grow, right?
Yeah. So again, I'll say maybe this is another takeaway from our last business that we were redone here. Number one is diversity. So I still remember when we hit 26 people at one of our last companies, we had 27 nationalities. And we were super proud of that because it was a lot of it was in London. There was this like authentic mix of different people all coming together. Mm. No one had, I don't think anyone even had lived just in London for more than 5 years, except for the few Londoners that maybe we had on the team. And we felt, I guess, it broke up pockets. It's not like everyone's the same, right? Everyone kind of interacted very well on that. So again, this time around, we've attempted to do the same. So we're really trying to bring in a diverse group of people. We've launched a site now down in Kenya. The team there has been amazing. Again, it's great because we've been really putting in the efforts into getting everyone to connect and work together. With that, now we got our first kind of we'll call it intercompany event, physical event. So we've got, I think it's the JP Morgan Challenge, the 5K that we're doing all around Kenya, Sweden, Madrid, and London. Nice. We've got everyone kind of out there planning. So things like that, again, it's bringing these groups together. I feel like it makes it easier to build connections.
And diversity, you mean diversity in, I'd like to understand it, diversity in what background? Is it diversity in education, diversity in locations that folk are coming from, or is it, it's just a bunch of everything,
so it's a mix of everything, right? So we actually had we do a quarterly all hands update. One of our proudest ones on there, 56% to 44% men to women. We are still targeting, and we are close to getting 50-50. Diversity in ethnicity, diversity in location, diversity in sexual preference, all of those we think makes for a better business.
Yeah.
I think beyond that, I think the reason it does, in my view, it brings different ways of thinking, right? Even the way that you know, some people being much more direct versus some people being more passive. So all of those things, when we're in a group that's more diverse, and that's oftentimes for any one of those reasons, whether it be culture or location, it starts to, you know, to either bring people out of their shell a little bit or make people respect other ways of thinking. And in our view, the end result of that is a better outcome.
Well, go back. I mean, you mentioned at the top of the show, you are a company that innovates.
Yeah.
And innovation in this instance comes out of the diverse group that you have, right? But what led you down that path? I mean, I know it's spoken about in mainstream media and, you know, everywhere, you know, on the street corners a lot. But as a founder and as a leader, how do you decide, okay, this is the way, and this is the group of people that I think is going to be the group of people that will take us forward and achieve our mission?
So again, I think, you know, when we look at now, we probably think it's a bit of experience and a bit of planning, right? The experience bit is that we worked in different types of organizations and we had different types of businesses. And I think probably both from a execution standpoint and from, in my view, a lifestyle perspective, just to, you know, it's nice being out to dinner with a diverse group of people who have all different opinions and even when it comes to, a Euro Cup or the World Cup, there's a little bit more banter around the table and everything, right? So there's a bit of experience us thinking that that worked better and it's what we enjoy. And then there is, you know, okay, we're doing this again. We got a new business. Now we've got no people, right? Then you got to plan it, right? These things don't happen by accident always. So it means that you have to create a culture that's open to diversity, right?
Yeah.
You need to make sure your hiring approaches are on that. And you need to have specific conversations. If your business is 90% men and 10% women, and you don't make any proactive actions to change that, it may not change. So you have to hold, if you want to do this, you need to hold yourself to a standard. You need to plan that out. You need to make sure that you're making decisions that help move that forward.
Mm. No, I hear you. And as you move forward, and we've already spoken about making certain that you increase your knowledge, you expand your horizons, but how do you make certain that you focused yourself, not your team, not, you know, the partners that you work with, but you yourself, how do you make certain that you focus on the present activity that needs to get done and completed, so you're gradiently moving towards where you want to go?
So obviously that can be difficult in some times, and there's a lot going on. So I'd say a few things. Maybe it comes out of the atomic habit, but I've tried to build in some habits here that are good. So as I start my day, I try to get my list of it. What are the top things that are on my desk today that I need to pay attention to, and make sure that I'm not, if things get busy and all of a sudden your important thing falls off the radar, right? So I try to start each day with a kind of clear view of that.
What do you do with that list? Do you just put it on paper, or do you put it in your diary, or is there a special app that you use? Maybe that's...
To be fair, right now it's purely like Apple Notes is what I'm okay, cool. Working off of. Keep it simple. And then, so it is... Probably a few things on there right now. What I'm working on is now that we have a wider team, is, you know, which ones should I be doing? Which ones should I be working with my team to do? Pre-team, it was just like, how late do I need to stay up tonight? But it's getting a little better control now, right? So that would be one thing. Two is, especially when we got a lot going on and things are busy, some of the important things aren't send a 5-minute email it's develop out the go-to-market plan for a new country, and there's a bit of thinking that needs to happen there. So, you know, what I've been trying to do and I work with is to, you know, set aside hours in my calendar, nice, in my diary. So at the beginning of the week, I've got kind of a planning session with some of the team. And out of that, you know, we'll put in, okay, Tuesday afternoon is looking nice and clear. Can we set aside 2 hours for this topic? Again, it helps control all of a sudden getting to Tuesday afternoon and realizing that your whole afternoon is filled up now and you don't get to that. So, like I said, some of these things just have to be practical. So if my little tools are, you know, my list, good diary planning. And now, especially, like I said, we have a team is really kind of delegating and making sure that the best person is doing the job, not just me because I'm the only person.
Yeah, yeah. And as you move forward and as you start looking at, you know, building out that team and taking the product and the business to new territories, what, as a leadership team, what factors are you concerned with or thinking about post-COVID? And what questions are you asking yourself so you can achieve your objectives and your goals?
Yeah, so I think what we really look at as we scale is a repeatable growth model, right? So as we're looking at markets, we think we have, you know, somewhat of a competitive advantage in the fintech space is that we're really not trying to be regulated, right? Which gives us flexibility as how we enter markets and the speed that we can grow. But we do recognize that there's still limitations and requirements of entering a market that if you don't get them right, you're going to spin a lot of wheels and not get a lot of productivity out of it. So for us, when we're looking at something like digital banking and we're looking at entering a new European market, if you want to be providing a banking platform and you don't have access to local IBANs, you know, you're not going to go very far. So as we start assessing a market, we look at who are our existing partners, are they operating in those markets? If they're not, do we need to enter a new market? Do we need to get a new partner to enter that market? And we start building these things out to say, okay, can we go here? Or if not, when can we go here? And if we, you know, if we're going to be planning on going there in July 1st, when do we need to be hiring people and the likes of that to be able to get there? So, you know, for us, we want we've got our market entry playbook that we want to make repeatable. Therefore, if we make a mistake or we get something wrong when we get into a market, we make it better for the next time. So first thing is consistent, that we've got a strategy that maybe comes back from the old consulting days. I do love a good methodology, and us, you know, playbooks are a good methodology. We can make it really good. We can improve upon it. I think the other thing is just, you know, it does come down like what's the best market to go into. And you can come off of a phone call with somebody and all of a sudden be super excited. That's a huge market opportunity. We got to be there. And then you realize there's 10 places you got to be, right? So there's that stepping back and going, okay, you know, what's the best for the business? Where do we have the best fit? Where can we go to? Because you can't do it all at once. So I think there's a little bit of there just not getting swayed too easily by what's going on. Again, same thing, probably one of the biggest considerations when we're looking at this, especially where we go next, a lot of the markets still lack the correct, I'll call it fintech financial infrastructure to get there. It's not to say they don't have good banking, but you know, when we looked at, you know, one of our clients wanted us to bring over for a deal in the Middle East, and we couldn't identify a strong BaaS provider there yet. We saw some good things in open banking, but without, you know, not being able to connect into banking partners, it's really hard to get there. And we've even seen, what we've started to see now is a bit of a trend because of the maturity in UK specifically, but also Europe. A lot of these other geographies are actually coming over here looking to get a proposition live here first to understand how it works, to prove knowledge of the market and the likes of that, all with an intent to bring back and be a first mover in home market. And we're working with a number of those businesses, and we think it'll be a good opportunity to ease our way back into those markets.
Cool. Sounds interesting. And as we sort of start wrapping up the show, what's one thing you would recommend to, you know, founders and leaders that are just starting their scaling journey, both from a personal perspective and also a professional perspective? I know we've touched on a couple today, but be interested to dive into some more insights.
Yeah, I think, you know, on the personal perspective, find whatever your happy place is or your whatever you got, because it is. And you know, I fall into this trap a lot, as I do know others, where you find yourself, you know, whether it be Saturday evenings or Friday nights, actually, you know, stuck in thinking about work. And sometimes, right, sometimes you have to, right? There's points and times in the business where, you know, no matter what happens, sometimes it is hard work and effort that what you need to apply to make things work, right? But if you know what your comfort zone is, what makes you kind of relax outside of that, at least when things start to slow down or when you get a chance to lift your head above water, you know where to go back to. If you don't know where to go back to, you'll find yourself, you'll make up work on a Saturday night because you got nothing else to do. So whatever it is, whether it be you're reading a hobby, I wish it was golf, but like I said, I got small kids. Find that so you know what to go back to. From a professional perspective, especially as you're looking at your business, I'd almost say there's one thing about startups where you need to have this mix of culture of work hard, do everything you need to get it over the line, race for things and all that. But, you know, as we've gotten a bit older, right, as a mature startup founder, right, I think trying to run your business correctly from day one is quite critical. Because then you start setting metrics, right? You say, okay, what do we want to achieve? What's success and what's failure? Because if you don't start having those, you can go off on paths that you shouldn't have gone down. So if you start holding yourself to an account, if you make sure that you're putting some process in on how on a monthly basis do you step back and say, did we hit our objectives? Are we doing what we're doing? I think people can get easily distracted by a potential and not end up following what they plan. It's not to say you don't change the plan, because most startups will change their plan, mm-hmm. but at least you're sitting there going, we're changing our plan because that's working better than what we thought was going to work. So the earlier you start running your business correctly, you know, from day one, the better chance you're going to have of succeeding. Yeah, and being sane.
I like the last part. Yeah, brilliant insights. And listen, I think for everyone listening to this episode, there are actionable insights here. And what I want you to do is maybe re-listen to some parts of this episode and take down notes and start implementing what we have discussed, because you are then going to be able to create a better culture, lead your teams better, and also become a sane founder and leader, because you're going to be in your happy space. So do that. If you've got any questions, drop me a note at richard@scaleupconsulting.co. But Michael, listen, mate, absolutely amazing episode today. Loved it. And thanks for being on the show.
Great. Definitely. And thanks for having me on.
Nice, mate.